Welcome to the critique. Let's just jump right in. This manuscript proposes a life-grounded framework and the life-operational grammar to connect clinical medical competence with the systemic enabling conditions and distributed accountability required to truly protect human and ecological health.
Yeah, and I have to say right off the bat, the research here is it's conceptually brilliant. It's exceptionally strong material.
Absolutely. Which means the tone of our critique today is going to bypass the basics. We are going to focus entirely on high-level editorial refinement to maximize the impact of what is already a very robust academic argument.
Right, we don't need to hold their hand. We can get straight to the structural adjustments.
Exactly. So let's start with our first piece of feedback. The foundational buildup delays the introduction of the central life operational grammar, risking reader fatigue before the most actionable tools are revealed.
Yeah, the structural pacing in these early pages is undeniably the most significant vulnerability we need to address.
Because the manuscript spends an extensive, almost exhaustive amount of time outlining preliminary theoretical concepts before the reader is ever allowed to see the core operational tool.
Right, it's just pages and pages of buildup.
Exactly. We are taken through these incredibly dense, multi-page explanations of the competency sufficiency error, and then, you know, followed by deep theoretical dives into professional identity formation.
And situated agency.
Yes, situated agency, collective competence, institutional capability. I mean, by front-loading all of this heavy sociological and educational theory, the text inadvertently dilutes the immediate impact of its most practical, usable tools.
It's just a lot to get through. As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that the medical profession is stuck in a dangerous, self-perpetuating loop, right?
That's the core of it, yeah.
Like the system believes that perfectly training a doctor, ensuring they ace every board exam and can recite the exact biochemical pathways of respiratory disease, is somehow sufficient.
Which it isn't.
Right, because they are completely ignoring the structural reality of the patient's life. Like, if a doctor treats an asthmatic child in the ER, but that child goes home to a damp, mold-filled apartment situated next to a congested industrial highway, well, the doctor's biochemical knowledge is fundamentally insufficient to heal them.
It doesn't matter how well they know the pathways.
Exactly. That is the competency sufficiency error in a nutshell. It is the fallacy that individual cognitive mastery equals systemic capability.
Beautifully put. And it is a profound concept that absolutely belongs in this manuscript. I mean, the author is meticulously building a fortress of theory to prove why the current medical education model is failing.
Yeah, they want the reader to fully internalize the historical and sociological weight of that failure.
Right. Before they introduce the LIFE acronym and the practical constraints audit.
But I have to look at how this is paced, and I have to admit some confusion regarding the user experience.
How so?
Well, is this current structure like a medical diagnosis where a doctor spends an hour explaining the history of the stethoscope before giving the patient their treatment plan? I mean, does this pacing inadvertently delay the cure for the reader?
Oh, the stethoscope analogy works perfectly. But let's take it even further. It's not just delaying the cure. It's making the reader wonder if the author actually has a treatment plan at all.
Like, is this just going to be a history lecture?
Exactly. The readers of this manuscript are institutional leaders who likely already know the system is broken. They live with the competency sufficiency error every single day.
Right. Medical deans and curriculum designers, they don't need convincing.
No, they don't need 100 pages of convincing. They need a lifeline. So the suggestion here is to restructure the early sections to introduce the LIFE framework immediately after defining the core problem.
Just get straight to the tool.
Yes. The subsequent theoretical concepts should then be used as supporting pillars to explain how the LIFE framework operates, rather than acting as prerequisites to seeing it.
Okay, so let's get into some concrete examples of how to execute that structural shift. First, the manuscript features this incredibly useful graphic, Figure 2, which visualizes the LIFE diagram. That's LIFE, influences, fit, and evidence.
Oh, that diagram is great.
Right? So that figure needs to move significantly closer to the introduction, perhaps right into the first major chapter. Readers need that visual anchor early on so they know what they are building toward.
I completely agree. But what do we do with all the heavy theory?
Well, when discussing situated agency, you know, the idea that a doctor's ability to act is constrained by their environment, like a clinic that only allows 10-minute appointments, weave those concepts directly into the explanation of the FIT component of the acronym.
Oh, I see. So instead of an isolated philosophical section, it becomes part of the instruction manual.
Exactly. You give the reader the tool first and then introduce collective competence as a mechanism of that tool. It transforms from abstract philosophy into applied science.
That changes the fundamental momentum of the piece in a really good way.
Teamwork is urgently needed. You know, anticipating how an intervention might fail before it even starts.
Yeah, by making those structural changes, you stop asking the reader to wait for the solution and instead hand them the tool the moment they walk through the door.
Absolutely. Now that we've optimized the flow to reveal the universally applicable life framework faster, we need to examine a section where the manuscript's universal applicability suddenly narrows, which brings us to the localized Ottawa demonstration.
Yes, the shift in focal length here is genuinely jarring.
It really is. The highly specific perspective demonstration opportunity in Ottawa abruptly localizes a framework designed for universal systemic application.
It's a sudden pivot, because early in the manuscript, the author successfully uses highly relatable universal clinical tracers.
The asthma example.
Right. A child with asthma and a patient with cardiometabolic disease. Those are brilliant rhetorical choices because they prove the framework's broad utility. A physician in London, Mumbai, or Toronto instantly understands the systemic failures there.
It's a global language.
But then, the text abruptly abandons that global lens and shifts into a hypergranular critique of the 2026 University of Ottawa Planetary Health Report Card.
Let's look closely at the section discussing the Ottawa demonstration. They start citing specific student-led grades from this report card, right?
Yeah. They point out things like the university scoring a 0 out of 3 on Indigenous knowledge metrics.
And an overall grade of a B-.
Exactly. And while that data is undoubtedly accurate, this sudden narrowing distracts from the overarching theoretical argument. It makes a globally relevant manuscript momentarily read like a localized university audit.
I have to ask a specific pushback here. Does anchoring this sweeping, high-level conceptual framework to a localized, student-led report card diminish the framework's overarching authoritative tone?
I think it does. It feels like we're looking at a sweeping satellite map of global weather patterns, and the author suddenly zooms all the way in to complain about a puddle in a specific parking lot in Ottawa.
That's a great way to put it. If I'm a medical dean in Australia reading this, I might assume this tool is only designed for Canadian academia. It alienates the global reader.
Right. So the suggestion here is to abstract the Ottawa demonstration into a generalized blueprint for institutional application.
Just abstract the whole thing?
Well, maintain the strategic steps for implementation, but remove the hyperlocal metrics that anchor it to a single specific university assessment. We want to show readers how to apply the framework to their own institutions.
So a concrete example of this would be to replace the specific grades from the Ottawa Planetary Health Report Card with a generalized mock institutional report card.
Yes, exactly.
That way they can demonstrate how the life constraints audit exposes common university gaps without bogging the reader down in the politics of one specific campus.
That works perfectly. Alternatively, as another concrete example, if they really want to keep the hard-won empirical research, they can move the Ottawa-specific demonstration entirely into an appendix.
Oh, frame it as an optional localized case study.
Right, rather than a required step in the primary narrative flow. It preserves the global voice in the main text while offering the localized proof for those who seek it out.
I love that compromise. Okay, so having abstracted the institutional application to maintain the framework's universal scale, we must now look at how vital jurisdictional nuances, specifically Indigenous self-determination, are woven into that broad scale, leading us to the sovereignty stress test.
This is a really crucial editorial refinement.
The critical discussion of Indigenous food sovereignty operates more as an isolated stress test rather than an integrated dimension of the core accountability architecture.
Yeah. And to be completely clear, the content itself is vital, respectful, and highly accurate. The manuscript does a really excellent job highlighting distinctions-based practice.
They cite the First Nations OCAP principles.
Yes, and the Inuit Nunagant food security strategy, and the Kahanawake School's diabetes prevention project. The author clearly understands the profound importance of these frameworks.
Yeah, they make a strong case.
They highlight the Inuit Nunavut strategy as an essential perspective where food security isn't just supply chain logistics. It's inextricably linked to self-determination, and they beautifully outline the necessity of First Nations data governance.
The concepts are incredibly sound. The weakness lies entirely in how they are structurally deployed. By sequestering these vital concepts into a section literally titled A Harder Stress Test that follows the cardiometabolic tracer, the manuscript inadvertently treats Indigenous jurisdiction as a secondary edge case to be checked off.
Almost like an afterthought.
Right. Rather than a fundamental integrated pillar of the governance and jurisdiction field outlined early in Figure 1.
So, if legitimate self-determination is a foundational enabling condition of health, shouldn't it be established in the core architecture of the framework rather than introduced later as a stress test for it?
Exactly. A stress test inherently implies a normative baseline that is being pushed to its limit by something external. But Indigenous jurisdiction shouldn't be the external variable stressing the system. It should be part of the baseline that defines the system in the first place.
That makes so much sense.
So the suggestion is to elevate the principles of Indigenous data governance, protocol, and self-determination from a localized stress test into the foundational definitions of the core life components. We need to ensure they are woven into the framework's DNA from the very beginning.
Okay, let's give some concrete examples of how to stitch this deeply into the DNA. If we take OCAP, Ownership, Control, Access, and Possession, they should embed the mention of OCAP directly into the initial definition of the FIT section of the life grammar when first explaining legitimate authority and jurisdiction.
Yes, because OCAP literally defines who has the authority to gather data in the first place.
Exactly. You can't just nod to it on page 20. Furthermore, they could utilize the Kahnawake School's Diabetes Prevention Project earlier in the text as a primary example of institutional capability and collective work.
That's a brilliant move.
Right? Because by demonstrating community-led governance through Kahnawake before reaching the specific food system stress test, the concept of legitimate distributed accountability is already fully established as a norm.
It radically shifts the narrative from saying, here's how our universal framework handles the unique stress of Indigenous jurisdiction, to saying, Indigenous jurisdiction is one of the core building blocks that makes this framework legitimate in the first place.
It's a profound elevation of the material's impact. It tightens the structural bolts so the pacing, scale, and foundational logic are completely unified.
Which is exactly what this caliber of research deserves.
All right, so to briefly recap the three main critiques today. First, restructuring the early sections to introduce the life framework earlier, moving dense theory to act as supporting pillars rather than prerequisites.
Second, abstracting the Ottawa demonstration to maintain universal relevance, perhaps by using a mock report card or moving the specific data to an appendix.
And finally, weaving Indigenous self-determination, like OCAP and the Kahnawake Project, into the foundational architecture of the FIT component, rather than saving it for a stress test.
Those actionable changes will make a massive difference in readability and global impact.
They really will. We warmly invite the listener to implement these changes and submit their revised manuscript back in for a future critique. To navigate a complex healthcare ecosystem, we can't afford to bury the compass in the final chapters. We have to hand the reader the tools they need the moment they step into the woods.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.